Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, today we're going to talk about living out our faith. And maybe emphasize the living out part, because we're going to focus on that third of life. And if you're anywhere in nearing 60, age 60 or above, then you've certainly been thinking about that a lot. Dwight L. Moody said, "Preparation for old age should begin not later than one's teens. A life which is empty of purpose until 65 will not suddenly become filled on retirement." All right, we're going to talk about that today, about that third of life, from one who's on the journey, and he'll help us find adventure and purpose in our 60s and beyond. Ted, I'm looking forward to you. You can kind of doze off on this one.
So I don't know.
No, actually, we'll get some good insights on how we can even do some preparing now.
Yeah, well, you think of, like, at my age, in my mid-40s, I think of, well, investments. If I'm doing that, I'm good.
Sure.
And you don't think about, what will I actually be doing in retirement? So this will be good.
Also coming up on today's show, a new addition to the lineup as we get the Monday Health Tip from Lisa Marone. And she'll be making a visit with us every other Monday, so we're excited to have her on the show. And it's also Memory Verse Monday, and we'll get to that in a moment. But speaking of remembering, yesterday, of course, Patriots Day, the anniversary of 9/11, and I think just about anybody under 20 probably remembers where they were, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, my daughter was born in April of 2001, so just a mere few months old when that happened, and she obviously has no recollection of that, but there's a whole young generation now that's growing up that considers it just like Pearl Harbor, something in history that they didn't actually technically live through or can remember. So that's kind of a perspective for, passing on what happened to the younger generation and the whole never forget thing and keep going forward.
And memory is certainly an important part of our experience. And the scriptures talk about that a lot, right? To remember. Mm-hmm. We're told to remember. We'll get actually some scriptures from our guest, Hans Van Zyl, in a few moments. We talk some biblical principles for launching your encore, finding adventure and purpose later in life. But let's get to today's memory verse. Each Monday we've been doing for the past several weeks, been doing a Bible verse just to reflect on and getting some insights from Andy Stanley. And today's verse comes out of Ephesians 4 and into chapter 5. It's on forgiveness. "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us." Let's hear Andy Stanley's thoughts on today's verse.
Do you know why we don't forgive? A couple of reasons. We don't forgive because we don't think we can. And we don't forgive because we don't think they deserve it. The thing that keeps you all charged up against people is because you have these thoughts. And these are all lies. That if I forgive, that's like saying, "Hey, I'll teach you to hurt me. I'll let you off the hook." That doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. And to forgive is to sort of say, it's okay. Peace be with you. Go hurt somebody else. Hurt me again if you want. There's going to be no consequences. We don't want to forgive because we feel like we need to punish people for what they've done to us. That's all erroneous thinking. But yet, for many of you, it keeps you from forgiving. Look at this verse. "Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has also forgiven you." Do you know why we forgive? Because we've been forgiven. Look at the rest of the verse. "Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us." You see, if you have a problem forgiving, there's somebody you're really angry at. You just replay those tapes in your mind over and over and over. You have bought into, you're being controlled by things that just aren't true. Because you can forgive, and you ought to forgive. Because you are a forgiven person. See, this, every time you start playing those tapes and having those imaginary conversations, this verse just needs to, boom, just be right there. So that you can forgive.
Ephesians 4:32-5:2, our memory verse for today. Yesterday was Grandparents' Day, and grandparents have learned a lot about forgiveness over the years and also about passing on some faith and values. And that's always evident, it seems to me, about passing on our wisdom to the next generation, because today's generation needs so much wisdom, as John Stonestreet brings evidence of again today with The Point.
It's okay to say no to our desires. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stonestreet with The Point. There's two big sins in our modern culture. The first, telling someone what they're doing is morally wrong. And the second, suggesting we ought to say no to our strongest urges. To secular society, that's repression. It's a sin against our true selves, we're told. And nothing has come under sustained attack as repressive more than Christian sexual morality. That's okay, says pro-life speaker Jonathan Van Maren. Followers of Jesus have always been all right with being seen as sexual squares. Christians realize that there are greater goods than the gratification of desire, he says. Delayed gratification, waiting for sex until marriage, strengthens the marriage bond and creates an exclusivity worth more than 100 tawdry hookups. He's right. God's rules for sex exist for a reason, based on how he created the world and humans. And it's not to spoil our fun. That's why ultimately we know that so-called repression and obedience to the Savior is better than all the expression the world has to offer. I'm John Stonestreet.
Well, here we are at 10 past the hour and looking forward to diving into today's conversation with Dr. Hans Finzel. Hans is a successful author, speaker, and trusted authority in the field of leadership. For 20 years, he served as president of the international nonprofit World Venture, working in over 65 countries. Hans speaks, writes, and teaches on practical leadership principles from the real world, not just the classroom. And he's written 9 books, including the one that we'll reference today, Launch Your Encore, Finding Adventure and Purpose. Later in life, he co-wrote that with Rick Hicks. He's also written the bestseller, The Top 10 Mistakes Leaders Make. And he's trained leaders in 5 continents, and his books have been translated in over 20 foreign languages. Today, he serves as president of HD Leaders, and teaches and speaks globally in all things leadership. And we're glad to welcome Hans Finzel back to Connecting Faith. Hans, good to talk with you again.
Great to be with you again, Neil.
We're going to talk about that third of life, because it was back in 2011, the first of 76 million baby boomers, nearly a quarter of the U.S. population, began turning 65. You've been there, done that. I don't know. Are you 65 yet? But you've moved into that next stage, though, right?
Yes, I hate to admit it, but I am 65. Yeah, and when Rick Hicks and I, we've been buddies for years and leading ministries for years. And when we hit 60, we started thinking about this phase of life, and we both hate the word retirement, and I find a lot of people just really hate that word. If you think about it, retire means kind of like go to bed, you know, retire for the evening, check out, and I don't think the boomers, our generation, is just going to lay down and play dead and no longer be in the game.
Approaching that ever closer in early 60s, there's a tension between being maybe ready for retirement or for the next phase, but maybe not necessarily prepared for it. Preparation now is really pretty essential, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of why we wrote the book, because we began to realize we need to get prepared, and the worst thing you can do is drift into your 60s. And not prepare at all for what's next. And that's kind of what the book answers the question, what's next? And like you mentioned at the outset, about 8,000 to 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65 every single day and will continue for the next 10 years. And a lot of them have to transition out of their employment. I call it the Jay Leno effect. Even he was forced into retirement at 65, even though he was a king of the late night. And that's happening across the board. There are a few professions where you can just keep working until you drop dead someday. But for many, many people, they have to retire. They're forced out for one reason or another. And so then the question is, what's next? Because I'm not ready to just quit being productive. I'm not ready to quit being significant or involved, you know. So that's kind of why we say you have to get ready.
Well, as you mentioned, that's just probably one of the aspects, right? There's a change in some sort of career path, but there are all sorts of other transitions that are going to happen, and you know, there's going to be more than one. They come fast, and at this point, there's not a lot of time for do-overs. So what are some keys to handling those transitions? Maybe what areas are they, and then how do we handle them well?
Okay, well, your career is a huge one, and I talked to so many people who had to, quote, retire from their career, but they didn't want to quit working. So retooling for another profession could be a huge thing. It could be something you've always wanted to do. I was out in a little town in California recently with my daughter and her husband and my wife, and we went to this coffee shop, and this older couple's running this coffee shop, and they said, you know, this has been our, they were like in their mid-60s, and they said, we've wanted to move to this city for 20 years, Cambria, California, and it took us 20 years to get here, but now we're living our dream. So sometimes it's actually getting around to doing something you wanted to do your whole life. So career, health is a huge area. How's your health, and are you taking care of your health? And that's everything from exercise to nutrition to issues like what kind of house are we going to live in? A lot of boomers are moving to homes with main floor masters without stairs because they realize, you know, as you get older, you've got to, you have more physical limitations. So another area I think would be finance, huge. And, of course, that you do need to start in your 30s and 40s. But financially, the question of how prepared are you for your 60s and 70s is going to really determine kind of what your activity is going to be. So those are some of the really big areas.
Talking a little bit about some of the transitions that we go through and how we can work through them to become, to find purpose later in life. Finding Adventure and Purpose Later in Life is the subtitle of Hans Finzel and Rick Hicks' book called Launch Your Encore. And we've got a copy of that to give away, and we'll do that here at the end of the hour. And love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you are in this transition time and you've got some experience you want to share, or you've been thinking about it, or just looking back, say, here's some things I would like to do differently, or if you just have a question about how that works. You can let us know. The number is 877-933-2484. We'll get some good insight from Hans Finzel, successful author, teacher, podcaster, trusted authority in the field of leadership. And he's served as a number of years as president and CEO of international nonprofit World Venture. And they have a new ministry right now called HD Leaders, hdleaders.com. The leadership answer man is what Hans Finzel is, and we're honored to have him with us today. Love to hear from you, 877-93-FAITH, and join us with a question or a comment, and we'll talk more with Hans in a moment. We're going to talk about, you know, how do we become identified in something outside of our work, and we'll learn about a tag team that Hans and his wife had to really help them work through some of those things. More on that coming up. We're talking about living strong right to the finish line, not sort of, stumbling around third base. How do we handle that third of life, that special window in the kind of the 60 to 80 range, as Hans Finzel has highlighted it, and we're talking about it today as we reflect on his book, Launch Your Encore, Finding Adventure and Purpose Later in Life. And purpose really is one of the keys, isn't it, Hans? Say more about that, because obviously, it's going to make a difference not only in our health, but just in life in general. Say more about purpose.
Yeah, you know, you were talking at the top of the hour about 9/11 and how we all remember where we were. And our generation, we grew up in the 60s and 70s. And I think one of the characteristics of the boomer generation was they wanted to make a difference. We wanted to change the world. And it's true, we became like the most materialistic generation America's ever seen. But I still think there's that passion in our hearts to make a difference. Okay, so what happens when you, quote, have to retire or you reach the retirement years? You have to find a new purpose. And, you know, we don't believe, Rick and I, who wrote this book together, we don't believe that there's satisfaction in just playing golf and collecting shells on the beach. You know, some people have this. We talk at the beginning of the book about if you have this attitude of entitlement, you know, I'm now entitled to just spoil myself and do what I want to. We think you're going to be pretty miserable, and you might even go to the dark side, the dark place of depression and misery. So to us, a key is to find a new purpose. And there are so many things we can do later in life. For one thing, we can give back, you know, volunteer. We can make a difference. We can mentor young people. And so we're kind of passionate about helping people find purpose. And it's probably a new purpose or maybe an old dormant purpose that you suppressed years ago that you need to rekindle.
And we'll talk more in a moment with Hans Finzel. But let's take a call from Frank. Frank's a regular listener and is not really retired, I don't think. Frank, you call us something else. Frank, welcome. You're on with Hans.
Oh, praise the Lord. Glad to hear. Hans just spoke my story. He just gave my message. I don't consider myself as retired, but rather as refired. After my wife passed away back in April of 2002, and the Lord brought me through one of the most horrible times of depression and of suffering that I'd ever experienced in my life. You know, I now work with a Love Lines, a Christian ministry, and counsel others to comfort them as he comforted me and give them hope and vision for the purpose. And I'm also in the process of writing a Christian science fiction novel, something I've wanted to do since I was a kid.
Well, Frank, and, good for you.
No, hey, that's finding a whole new way.
Yeah, I always appreciate you listening, and I always appreciate you checking in, Frank. Thank you for that, and I think it's a reminder for all of us, right, that there are other things that we can do, and, you know, I guess maybe we should talk about doing those, shouldn't we? Because it seems like boomers especially have been so identified by our work. So how do we rediscover who we are outside of our jobs?
Sorry.
I'm just looking for you, Hans, just to reflect on that about, you know, it's not all about our work anymore, right? Because we're probably not at the same career we had.
No, and it's some people, I mean, financially, there's a huge gap. And I know some people who have reached their retirement years and they are set up so well financially that they literally can do whatever they want, whenever they want. But I find even if they spend all their time hanging out with their grandkids, going on cruises, going on river, you know, the Rhine River tours, they still sense a need to do something significant. I have a good friend, John. He lives on the East Coast. He's in his 70s. He retired really well, but I remember he served on my board of directors, and I remember him telling me, you know, Hans, you know, it really doesn't matter if you have all the money in the world you want to do whatever you want. You have to do something of meaning and purpose. It's back to that meaning and purpose and significance. So at one end of the continuum, you can have a lot of financial resources, and it gives you a lot more options. But I find a lot of people are at the other end of the continuum. They haven't prepared well, you know. The savings rate in America is not that great. And if you haven't prepared financially for retirement, you're probably going to have to keep working. And that's back to that idea of retraining the caller that just called in, you know, coming up with new skills. And I find that in many communities here where I live in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, we have all kinds of free programs in our community for baby boomers who are getting older on retreading, you know, getting new skills for new kinds of employment, new ways to get involved in the community. So there's a lot of resources. So it depends a lot financially on where you are. For a lot of people who are listening, you're probably going to have to keep working, but you may have to shift what you do to make money.
You you set up a little of what you call a tag team for you and your wife as you were making some transitions. Talk about the value of that wise counsel. Maybe explain a bit more about that.
Well, when I turned 60, I decided to, quote, retire early from my career. I was the CEO and president of a big international ministry, World Venture, and I felt like I had lost my passion for that, and I wanted to do something different. I love writing, speaking, teaching, training, and all the stuff I loved. I really wanted to go out. Well, we decided, my wife and I, to create a tag team. We called that Transition, Affirmation, and Guidance. That's what TAG stands for. Four people who knew us really, really well for over 30 years to guide us and to speak into our lives and to counsel us to make the right decision. Because here's what happens, Neil. A lot of times people make stupid decisions at this stage in life. They may quit their plan A job before they've really built their plan B. So this tag team actually worked with my wife and I. We met quarterly for over a year. I think we met for about a year and a half as they guided us toward what we should do next and to make sure we don't make mistakes, and also to really help us understand at this stage in Hans's life, what is Hans's greatest contribution to the planet? What can I uniquely do at this stage in my life that nobody else can do? So that was the purpose of that tag team, and it was very successful, and it helped me so much make the right decisions about my next steps.
Is this, you know, when it comes from a biblical perspective, is this something where we've just sort of bought into the American dream that, you know, our life has to have meaning and purpose and that we find that in work? Or, you know, help us maybe understand what is a biblical role of maybe the servant look like compared to what we're talking about today?
Well, what, you know, we have a chapter in the book about what the Bible says about getting old. And one thing I love about what the Bible says about aging is, you know, gray hair is a crown of wisdom. The Bible honors older people, whereas our culture worships youth. And we don't really honor our aging population the way that the Bible does. You know, it was the Western culture that created retirement homes and retirement communities, almost like to shuttle off the elderly away from the general population. That's not a biblical term. And so to us, you know, one thing I love, Psalm 139, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And that goes from the time I'm 8 years old until the time I'm 98 years old. So the Bible honors aging. The Bible honors wisdom. And I think segregating older people away from the general population and in the church, you know, the more we mix all the ages together, the better.
I'm going to jump in and we'll take a quick break here and come back, talk more with Hans Van Zyl. Hans is a best-selling author, teacher, podcaster, and we're talking about Launch Your Encore, Finding Adventure and Purpose Later in Life. We've got a copy to give away. You can sign up for it at 877-93-FAITH.
Yes.
Now, remembering the Sabbath to keep it holy is actually one of the commandments. We don't do very well at it, do we? How do you find rest in a 24/7 world? You know, the Hebrews were slaves in Egypt. We become slaves to technology, and we're trying to find a prescription for a healthier, happier life. Former emergency room doctor Matthew Sleeth is with us today, and so he's doing the diagnosis. We're talking about his book, 24/6. And we do have some copies to give away. I'd love to have you join the conversation. If you'd like as well, you can sign up for a copy and give us a call at 877-933-2484. Matthew, just say a word about maybe how long it takes to slow down. I think when people go on vacation, and maybe some are heading for vacation this week, It seems like it takes several days before you really get to unwind, and some maybe never really do. Does that mean that we're running on adrenaline this whole time? And that's not really very healthy for us, is it?
I think we are running on fumes, and I found that one of the advantages of for me and my family and other people who are really beginning to practice the Sabbath is that it trains you how to downshift a lot quicker. And because as you begin to know the Sabbath and you know that it is a time of rest and renewal, you get better at kind of dropping your cares at the door, as it were. And so I think it has benefits for people, whether or not they're going on vacation or just whether they're entering into Sabbath every week, that you really learn the skill. We live in a day and age where we have all this confidence and not really a lot of skill sometimes to back it up. And you know, many studies show people think they can do all kinds of things, and in fact, they can't. I think that the same applies even for resting and coming into sync with the Lord, that it really requires some practice. And Sabbath is a once-a-week reminder of how to take our hands off the wheel and leave some of the driving to somebody else, mainly God.
You know, you use the word, I mean, the skill. Most of us would think, well, what kind of skill is there? Does it take to rest or to Sabbath? So what would you say? How do we actually get into this rhythm if we haven't been practicing it up until now?
Oh, I'd say it's absolutely a skill. It's interesting that if you look at how people talked about Sabbath breakers 200 and 300 years ago, they always saw that in the rubric of people who were slothful. People who would not keep Sabbath fell under being slothful. They didn't know how to do it. They didn't want to take the time to learn, that sort of thing. And so it's a skill that's learned. For people who are totally overwhelmed by the idea of 24 hours of rest, I tell them now to start with four. Say every Sunday from 8 till noon, or pick some time, 4 hours, that's set aside and begin practicing with that. Ask the Lord to bless it. Ask the Lord to increase it for you, because some people, it's just so overwhelming, 24 hours without a schedule, without work, without entertainment. It is just overwhelming to them. So start slowly. We've got on our website, the sabbathliving.org, testimonies from families. There's one family that said the first 3 weeks we tried it, it was awful. They said, we thought we were going to have, you know, flying unicorns and leprechauns, and it was going to be great. And, you know, they have, it's a large family of kids. They said it was awful. But then they say 6 months into it, it's a totally different thing. Now they know how to stop, and now they're going and ministering out of fullness, not out of running on the fumes.
We'll ask you to maybe say more about that as we go along, but say a word about one of the, I know, big questions that you get, and I think we all deal with is the Sunday events going on now in terms of sports. You know, we want our kids to enjoy physical activity, but it seems like Sunday has become the day where all the games and the practices and everything happen.
You know, that's interesting. It isn't something I really discussed in 24/6. I didn't understand the extent of it. And to be honest, 3/4 of my time now is spent teaching pastors. I'm leaving here. I'm going to North Carolina. I'm teaching a group of pastors. That's just what I do. And they say, you know, you used to get a kid through high school. They'd go off to college, and they would, many of them would come back, and they'd lost their faith. And they said, we kind of lost them to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now the pastors say we lose them at 8 and 9 to traveling teams, and they're gone. Their parents have taught them that is the number one priority in our lives, is to get you on this team. And so it's a big challenge to the church. It's a big challenge to people's faith, but it's not a new challenge. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, and he talked about this, because games and sporting were so important to the Roman culture. And Paul talks about how people work so hard to get a crown made out of leaves that are wilted by the time you get home. We're supposed to be working for a crown that never fades, a crown that we can cast on the ground in front of the Lord. And that's to be our priority. So we're not facing a new challenge here. Paul, in his letters, even tells people not to become uncircumcised. A lot of folks today aren't aware that the reason to become uncircumcised in Paul's world was so you could compete in games. You couldn't compete in most of the games if you were circumcised. So they could literally do plastic surgery 2,000 years ago to become uncircumcised. Paul says, don't even think about that. Don't consider it. Competing for that fake trophy is a false god, really. I'm not saying that I'm not for activity. I'm not for people, you know, taking good care of their bodies. I'm a physician. I know how important that is. I've lost 40 pounds in the last 10 years. I get healthier and healthier every year. I understand how important movement and activity is. But that's different than competing for a false crown, a false idol that will fade. We're supposed to be worried about eternal things. And so I think many parents today are facing a difficult battle, and that is, which God do we serve first? I know of a soccer league in Southwest Florida where the parents got fed up with this, and they started one, and it's a very large league, and none of the teams will compete on Sunday. There are ways around this. But I think that's getting around it, and I think, in fact, we have to take it head on and say, maybe you're going to have to decide, and maybe a great time to teach a child what is the most important God to be served is when they're 8 and 9 years old. That the number one point of parenting, and I think in getting a child, is that that child loves the Lord, believes the Bible, and is set apart, is holy. So there's some tough things that people are facing, and there's no beating around the bush that sporting events and those types of things are actively competing with the church for business today.
Your kids, I'm sure, wrestled with it. You did, I'm sure, as well when your kids were younger. All right, how much gets done on a Sabbath day? I mean, if you didn't get to the store, do you need to get to the store? If there's a school assignment, how did you work through some of that?
Well, we became Christians when our children were teenagers, and we took the Bible seriously. And, you know, and I've never gotten in trouble doing it. And so I've never gotten in trouble parenting. So my kids were raised as pagans up until the time they were 12, 13, 14 years old, right around there. And we began taking the Sabbath commandment seriously. Sunday was a day for going to church, coming home, goofing off, reading, taking naps, reading books, playing board games, that sort of thing. But it was not a day for study or sports. And my children had to drop out of some of the sporting things. They had to not study on that day. I'm going to brag. My kids are all completely done with their education. My son just finished his residency. He's going to be boarded in internal medicine and pediatrics, and he and his wife will move to Africa, and they'll be missionary doctors. And during that entire process, he has kept one Sabbath day a week where he hasn't studied. He hasn't worked. It's been difficult, but he's done it. He graduated first in his high school class, first in his college class, first in his residency now. And so it can be done. And to him, that's to glorify the Lord. So if you think your child's going to end up, unable to be employed or unpopular, so that sort of thing, I can tell you firsthand from my children's experience that they did extremely well. And part of the reason was the Sabbath taught them to get their priorities straight. They had to get their studying done before that day. And then they had something no other kid had really. They had a day off. They had a day where they were not judged on their work, but they were just in the presence of the Lord and kind of praying and playing. And so I can tell you that it can be done. I don't think it's the easiest thing, but the rewards for things that we do are hard are actually some of the best rewards we get.
You mentioned that, the word prioritizing a couple times. Is this really just, I mean, when it comes down to it, is this simply just a matter of re-prioritizing?
I think it is. I think it's I think a similar type of discipline, if you will, is giving. I think if a family has financial trouble, the first thing you ought to do is start tithing. I think that that sets the priority of God first. And I think that right now, we, if you will, we have kind of time poverty in our lives. Everybody would like to have an extra day in the week. And instead of doing our priorities, I think setting one day aside for the Lord gets all the others in perspective. So I think it is a matter of prioritizing. I think that to me, as I read Christ and he's saying, you know, choose the big thing here. If you want your life, you're going to lose it. If you give it up, you're going to get it. And so God's ways are counterintuitive to humans. And I found that sometimes the best thing to do is just do them and watch what happens. Kind of like, because my father said so, even if you don't understand fully.
You just before I let you go, I know you've been, as you said, doing a lot of teaching to pastors. Pastors aren't immune from, I guess, you know, not keeping Sabbath either, and something where they can really be helpful in building this kind of culture and community within their church body.
They can. We have some stats on 2,000 pastors in North Carolina we work with specifically. When we started working with that group about 2+ years ago, 9% in some way observed the Sabbath. We've got that up to about a third. Surprisingly, their spiritual life is getting better. I don't think a pastor can do this in isolation of who the pastor serves, and I don't think the congregation can ignore the importance of Sabbath and expect to make it as a church in the long haul. So I think this is something that should be preached from the pulpit, but should be reinforced from the pew, if you will.
Matthew, it's always good to talk with you. We're just encouraged by the good work you're doing and just the wise bedside manner. I guess that helps a lot, too. So thank you for your good word for us today.
Hey, it's great to be on the show. And my blessings to your listeners as they wrestle with this. And hopefully God will put it on their heart to explore this a little more deeply.
I encourage you to go to sabbathliving.org for some more resources, sabbathliving.org. Talking to Dr. Matthew Sleeth, who is author of the critically acclaimed Serve God, Save the Planet, and also founder of Blessed Earth. It's a nonprofit organization that focuses on creation care. He and his wife Nancy live in Kentucky, and they've been practicing Sabbath for a number of years and has written about it in the book 24-6, A Prescription for a Healthier, Happier Life. So we'll take a short break and then come back with some takeaways and how we can apply living a 24-6 healthier, happier life and remembering the Sabbath. Also like to share a little bit of music that helps put it all in perspective. And we've got a great old hymn from the Martins to do just that. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Jesus, I am resting, resting in the joy of what thou art. I am finding out the greatness of thy loving heart. Thou hast bid me gaze upon thee, as thy beauty fills my soul.
Coming up in a moment, we'll get our Monday health tip. We'll leave some time before that. Here on Connecting Faith.
Oh, how great thy love, kindness, stood broader than the sea. Oh, how marvelous.
shake up society, and it's still in there somewhere. I think it's in the papers, it's some of the generation, but there's still that desire to go out and make it. I think that's innate, too, for any person. You know, if you just kind of live it for yourself, there's still that hold in your heart, so to speak.
Speaker who encourages people to get healthy for heaven's
I'm
sake.
Finding
she's been instructing, empowering us to invest in our health now to every stage of life. Been a regular here on Faith Radio, and we're honored to have her with us here for the next weeks. And Lisa, welcome. Good to talk with you today.
Neil, great to be with you today as well.
Well, I know last Monday your health tip related to something that is going to affect, sadly, more and more of us. By 2020, less than 4 years from now, an estimated 3 million senior Americans will have their sight robbed by a bandit known as macular degeneration. It's like, wow, that you'd think with all the technology, maybe we could figure something out there. But let's talk about this particular health concern as we age.
Yeah, you know, I love your subject today, Neil, because we're looking at what does our last trimester of life look like and how can we be most effective in advancing the kingdom on kind of as we're exiting this earth. And part of that is going to require that we have bodies that are physically able to do the things that God has still planned for us, and our eyesight is going to be key to that. And macular degeneration has really hit home personally for me. I have a dear friend who's 93 years old that I visit each week in the nursing home, and she has very advanced macular degeneration. And what that is it's a situation in where your vision, your visual field starts to deteriorate right in the center. And so if you were to, say, look at a clock, you might be able to see the numbers of the clock, but the center is kind of burned out. You wouldn't see the hands or the center of it. And so it's so frustrating because you have a little bit of your peripheral vision, but as this disease progresses, you lose more and more of what's really important, which is what's right in front of you.
And it is progressive, too, right? There's not really stopping it.
Well, there are two different types of macular degeneration. One is an age-related called dry macular degeneration, and that's just part of, you know, our wonderful drying out process as we get older, that that area of our retina begins to just dry out, lose some of its flexibility, its effectiveness. And there really is no they don't have any medicinal or surgical intervention for that, but we're going to talk about a whole lot of things that can prevent that, you know, that we can start doing younger in life. And then there's wet macular degeneration, and that form progresses very quickly, and there are medical and surgical interventions for that. And so you do, if you start to see, like, there's a little bit of blurriness, you know, you're losing the sharpness of your vision, a little bit of maybe a clouding over the center of your vision, you do want to get right to your ophthalmologist so that you can be properly diagnosed.
But as you said, Lisa, there are some things that we can do to keep good eye health. Let's talk about some of those things.
Yeah. One of the most important things up front is shading our eyes. You know, many of us neglect to wear sunglasses. You know, we slather our bodies with suntan lotion, but then we forget to put sunglasses on. And so we need to have sunglasses that have this UVA, UVB protection from the sun, because that will damage, those rays of the sun will damage our vision. And what I always tell people is, you know what, invest a little bit more in sunglasses and get polarized lenses on top of that UVA, UVB protection. a polarized sunglass is going to cut down 50% of the light rays. Light rays go vertical and they go horizontal, and so it will cut out half of that. So that's a great way to protect your eyes. That's one of the ways.
And I know one of the other things you talk about, which we'd say, really, is exercise. What does that mean?
Sound crazy? Yeah. That's not exercising our eyeballs, like with reading or something. Exercise in our physical bodies increases our circulation across the board. And so when we get, the more circulation you have, the better things stay fresh and young. And so by getting exercise, physical exercise, we improve the circulation in our eyes, in our retinas, and that's what's going to help to ward off this macular degeneration.
We
also want to eat well. There's so many things that we can eat throughout our lives that are going to protect our eyes from degenerating. And so certain foods that have what's called carotenoids in them, or lutens in them, those are things that are brightly colored. Bright green spinach, bright red tomatoes, red, orange, yellow peppers, bright yellow egg yolks, those things. God created those colors, and we want our eyes to be able to see those colors for as long as we can. And so eating those foods are really going to improve the health of our eyesight.
And you got just we got time for another tip or two before we run out of our time today.
Yeah, you know, the other things that I would recommend to my patients is that we want a diet that's chock full of omega-3 fatty acids. These are kind of found in cold water fish, in walnuts, in flaxseed, egg yolks, those sorts of things. And what omega-3 fatty acids do is every cell in our body has a membrane around it that protects it from attack. And part of that membrane is fatty acids. And so the better off our diets are in those fatty acids, the more fortified the walls are around all our cells. And so we can, you know, ward off invaders and damaging things that come at our cells, including the cells of our eyes, if we have a diet high in omega-3 fatty acids. So if you don't like fish, take fish oils or krill oil. A supplemental in a capsule is what I do just to make sure I get enough.
We're going to get good advice every other week here with Lisa Marone, and look forward to you joining us, Lisa. People want to find out more. I know you've got a Monday morning health tip. How can they connect with you?
Yeah, if they go to my website, lisamarone.com, that's M-O-R-R-O-N-E. If you want to sign up for my Monday morning health tips, it's on the top right-hand corner of that homepage. And there's lots of great information if you dig through my site. That would bless your health so that you can be a blessing to others as you go through your life, and especially in your last trimester.
I love that that visual reminder, that last trimester, and, of course, one of your best-selling books and the heart of your ministry, Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake, and that's really what it's all about. Lisa, honored to have you back with us. Good to talk with you today.
Great to talk with you, too. I just wanted to say Psalm 92:14 says they will still bear fruit in their old age. They will stay fresh and green, and that's our goal.
I like it. Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, author, and speaker, encourages people to get healthy for heaven's sake. Check out, sign up, get the health tip, lisamarone.com, M-O-R-R-O-N-E.com. We'll have Lisa on here in a couple weeks again. Looking forward to another health tip with her. Thank you for tuning in today to Connecting Faith. Of course, Ted, just a quick reminder that we are, you know, just hours away from launching our fall share.
That's so. Right. Yes. Tomorrow we start at 6 a.m. So you can go online right now. Maybe you got a busy rest of the week. Go ahead and make your pledge today at myfaithradio.com. Click on the support tab when you're there, myfaithradio.com. Maybe you could do the Club 360, we're calling it now.
Team 360, right? Team 360. And it's your gift of a dollar a day or 30 a month, or maybe you just take care of it all one time. But a 360 gift goes a long way. We're looking for several thousand friends to come on board at that level. And then we're going to hear some great testimonies of people whose lives have been impacted and changed because of Faith Radio. And it's because of your partnership and faithfulness. So thank you for that. And we just look forward to hearing from you here in the next few days. If you missed part of today's show, you can check it online. We post the interviews after the show at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And we'll join tomorrow during this hour, the very special Connecting Faith during Fall Share.